Into the Fold is a podcast on mental health issues produced by the Haug Foundation for Mental Health. The Haug Foundation is part of the Division of Diversity and Community Engagement at the University of Texas at Austin. The podcast is entirely funded by the Haug Foundation and produced by Haug Foundation staff. The views you are about to hear do not reflect those of the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hi there. Welcome to Into the Fold, a podcast on mental health issues. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and we are delighted to have you with us today for episode 104. We're talking about COVID-19 and media.
You know, so sort of the misrepresentation of risk, the misrepresentation of issues can really skew public perception. And then when you mix in that conspiracy theories and you mix in that into that the fact that we're already all stressed out, you mix in the fact that the science is uncertain, it becomes an incredibly, incredibly chaotic information environment.
The U.S. is now entering the ninth month of a pandemic that has claimed more than 200,000 lives and out of more than 7 million confirmed cases. Our country's chaotic, uncoordinated, and largely ineffectual response to the crisis has led to finger-pointing on all sides, as well as a sense that our institutions have let us down. Indeed, declining public faith in institutions, whether the federal government, the Centers for Disease Control, the FDA, or the healthcare industry, has implications for our ability to move past this that are every bit as profound as ramped up testing, lockdowns, economic relief, or a potential vaccine. One particular institution, the media, plays a central role in our ability to make sense of what's happening. And the media has not been spared its share of the blame for this crisis. Indeed, to say that the media has a public trust problem, earned or not, is an understatement. A 2019 Gallup poll found that only 41% of Americans currently have a great deal or fair amount of trust in mass media to report the news fully, accurately, and fairly. And the media landscape as a whole is increasingly fractured and divided along partisan lines. This would be troubling during normal times, but especially so in the face of something as unprecedented as COVID-19. How should we evaluate the media's coverage of the pandemic, and how can we all become more savvy media consumers? Joining us to help make sense of these questions is Dr. Timothy Caulfield, a professor of law at the University of Alberta, Canada, the research director of its Health Law Institute, and current Canada Research Chair in Health Law and Policy. He's the author of, among other books, The Cure for Everything, Untangling Twisted Messages About Health, Fitness, and Happiness, and Relax, Damn It, A User's Guide to the Age of Anxiety. Dr. Caulfield, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So my first question is, what does the evidence base say about the most important ways that media can either enhance or hinder people's ability to make sense of a complex phenomenon like COVID? And are there any historical precedents, good or bad, that we all can learn from?
Yeah, I mean, this is a complex question, and there really are, there's a really growing body of evidence that we can turn to on this topic. So, you know, rather than try to cover it all, I'm going to give you some of the things that I think are most problematic. And, you know, in some of my own work, I've had the opportunity to, you know, interview science communication experts all over the world. And I actually ask them this exact question, you know, give me the top three things that drive you nuts about how pop culture represents science, how pop culture represents health. And we're seeing it all with COVID. One of them is the consistent use of testimonials instead of good data. So what they'll say is, they'll give a story about someone recovering from a disease or someone using a particular therapy. And that testimonial will be used as evidence. And we know from research that testimonials, anecdotes, narratives can be really persuasive and overwhelm our scientific thinking. And that's for sure happening in COVID. We've seen that with Donald Trump is probably the most extreme example of it. You know, his experience with COVID, his experience with therapies. And we know research tells us that can have a real impact on how people perceive all these things. The other big error, I think, is observational studies, you know, mixing correlation and causation, you know, and this happens all the time. You know, in health, a lot of this research that get headlines are observational studies. And, you know, observational study can be useful. It can give you a sense of what's going on. But an observational study isn't really strong data. And we've seen that with like hydroxychloroquine and we've seen that with, you know, and we see that a lot in nutrition studies, for example, with the vitamin D story that's playing out with COVID. It's interesting research, but it's observational data. What you need are those good clinical trials, right? Randomized controlled trials. That's, and media does that all the time. In fact, some of the science communication experts have asked, say, this is the number one thing that drives them nuts. And then I think the other thing that we need to look to is the tendency of the media to use fear-mongering and scare tactics. Now, to be honest with you, in the area of COVID, they've been pretty good. They've been pretty accurate. I'm going to come back to that. The traditional news media, by the way, I'm talking traditional news media.
Right.
But we know that scare tactics can be very effective. We all have a negativity bias. There's really interesting research that shows that, you know, negative headlines get more traction. You know, they perform better than positive headlines. You know, so sort of the misrepresentation of risk, the misrepresentation of issues can really skew public perception. And then when you mix in that conspiracy theories and you mix in that into that the fact that we're already all stressed out, you mix into the fact that the science is uncertain, it becomes an incredibly, incredibly chaotic information environment.
Okay, so it seems that we're now living in a golden age of models and visualizations. I know, you know, the legacy media has gone, you know, full on with fancy visualizations of every kind. And that purport to explain different aspects of this crisis. Do you personally think that these are helpful? And do you think that the public understands well enough, you know, how modeling works in the context of public health?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And, you know, I don't have a lot of good data to back up the speculation you're about to hear, but I think it's both good and bad. Okay, so I'm going to contradict myself. There is good evidence about the value of imagery, right? The value of using science communication strategies that are impactful, right? And often these modeling images that get a lot of play on social media are exactly that. The problem is they can also be misinterpreted and they can be manipulated. And often I think that people don't have the science literacy skills to interpret them well. And again, we have a little bit of data to back that up. So the bottom line, I think, is that if done well, right, if done well and communicated well, they can be very powerful. For example, right now there's this information going around about excess death, right? You know, there's this myth around COVID that it's, you know, that not just as bad as the flu, that we shouldn't be so afraid of it. And there's been some visualization going around this week, right? Coming mostly from studies in JAMA or visualizations and modeling in JAMA, but really that highlight that the excess deaths that are the result of COVID, you know, And that's a really good marker, right, that this is a real situation, a real crisis, right? Because the number of deaths are relatively constant. You know, there's fluctuations, but, you know, if you can model that over years and you have, like, what should be, given everything that's going on minus COVID, what are the should be the expected deaths? So that kind of really straightforward, powerful modeling, I think, tells a story that we can all understand. These are the excess deaths. That are either a direct result of COVID or a result of, you know, the healthcare kerfuffle caused by COVID, the increase in social inequities that are caused by COVID. So I think it can be powerful if it's done well. the problem, as you probably know, and I think this is embedded in your question, is that it can also be manipulated. So, you know, we have to be careful how we use that kind of strategy. You know, one of the things that pop culture can really do and be very effective, you know, we historically, if we go back and we look at what has pop culture done with health crises that have been really effective. And one of the things is really about just normalization, right? You know, normalization of things like wearing a mask, normalization of things like, you know, understanding the social inequities that are out there when you have a health crisis, public health crisis like this, normalization of things like physical distancing, and also normalizing, you know, that civic duty. And we've seen that in the past. We saw that with the AIDS crisis, and we've seen it in other contexts. So pop culture is almost at its best, I think, when you see it playing that role in our public discourse.
I receive these daily reports of case and death counts from the Austin American Statesman, our local paper. Are there simple rules of thumb a non-expert can use to evaluate how well their own community is doing against coronavirus?
Yeah, so let's start first with what can we all do to sort of evaluate the science, right? Because there is so much science coming at us. And I think that we should all use a little bit of science literacy tools in order to evaluate, you know, how powerful is this study really? How relevant is this study really? And there are things that we can look for, right? And they're really also dramatic examples of how, you know, bad research can screw up. Like the hydroxychloroquine story is a really good example of that, right? Where you had this one small study from France, a preprint that was methodologically limited, blowing up, right? If you can apply critical thinking skills to this, to your evaluation of a news story about COVID or really about health more generally, it'll help in a variety of ways. So number one, what kind of study was it, right? You know, what's being reported by your public health authority? What's being reported by your local news? What's being reported on social media? What kind of study was it? Was it a big study? Was it an observational study? If it's a small study and just an observational study, you should be a little bit skeptical. Was it just an animal study, which we've seen with the real experimental treatments that are being talked about now in pop culture? Is it just a testimonial or an anecdote? You always want to encourage people to go to that body of evidence. Now, the good news is, this is coming more directly back to your point, most public health authorities around the world are trying to do exactly that, focus on the body of evidence, right? You know, aggregating this uncertain science in a responsible manner. And I think that that's what, you know, public health authorities can do. I think we really can turn to regional public health authorities to help inform us about what's going on. And my sense is, hasn't been perfect, but most public health authorities are trying to do a good job. Now, the other interesting thing to consider here is you do want to listen to entities like the CDC and the World Health Organization because you want to get that global picture, but you also want that regional lens, right? Because there are differences from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. There are different kinds of concerns. You know, the rural Alberta has a different story to tell than Houston, Texas, right? And so I think you want to get that big picture of looking at both, listening to both the World Health Organization, the CDC, and your regional public health authorities.
Okay, so the organization that I work for, the Hogg Foundation, focuses on mental health, and it has become pretty apparent to me that what is good for people is often not good for generating clicks or selling papers. And so you have written a book with the word relax in the title, exclamation mark. So what advice do you have for people just trying to, you know, stay sane in 2020?
I wrote this book, Relax, before COVID, you know, before the lockdown, before the economic crash, before the death counts. And it may seem a little bit incongruent, you know, even tone deaf, but in fact, all of my conclusions in this book, I think have become more relevant because the book really is about, you know, how we tease out the good science from the bad science, you know, how we inform our decision making in a way that doesn't, you know, that makes it so we don't stress out, right? So we, to reduce that anxiety. And some of the strategies are pretty obvious. You know, one of them is to recognize how chaotic the information environment actually is. Try to find trustworthy sources that speak to you. recognize that negativity bias that I referred to earlier. Recognize that people are often trying to use negativity to get clicks. And there's a little bit of evidence to suggest that just recognizing those things, you know, one really simple one, and I'm sure you've heard other people say this, is to take a social media break, to take a break from COVID. And look, I try to walk the talk, I really do. I try to get off social media, to avoid news from 9 p.m. on, right? And there is, again, some evidence, it's hard to study this well, that, you know, doing those kinds of strategies can really help. The other kind of strategy is to do that throughout the day. And I try to do that, and it's hard for me because it's part of my job being on social media, but take these moments where you allow yourself to focus on whatever task you have, to get into that flow. It's really hard to do that. And you can play little tricks for yourself. I do things like, you know, I'm not going to look at social media, et cetera, for an hour, and then I'll reward myself with an espresso. Now that sounds silly, but there's some evidence to suggest, you know, that can work. And the other thing are those mental health strategies that, you know, have starting to get a good body of evidence behind them, like exercise. There has been studies that have shown that as a result of the lockdown, result of COVID, people are more sedentary. The exercise rates are going down. There's some, you know, the data is kind of complex, but that's what is suggested in the data. So, you know, remember to do those simple things, those basic things that we know work. You know, you get a good night's sleep. You try to get exercise. You try to eat healthy. You don't smoke. You know, you try to drink in moderation. These things are so basic, but that chaotic information environment that I talked about before, you know, sort of pull us away from those basic strategies that, you know, that benefit really all of us.
Okay, so it's not every day that I get to speak with, you know, someone from our great neighbor to the north. You live and work in Canada. As an outsider, what most surprises or perplexes you about the U.S. response to the pandemic?
So I was originally born in the United States. I grew up in the United States. So I feel like I've got a foot in both cultures, and I'm down there all the time, right? You know, a couple things. You know, one, holy cow, you're not going to be surprised by this response, but holy cow, the profound polarization. You know, there's been a lot of really interesting studies that have shown exactly that, you know, Republicans and Democrats just talk differently about this pandemic, which is, you know, is absolutely fascinating. Now in Canada, we're starting to get a little bit more polarization. Studies that happened, you know, just months ago found that there was not that much polarization in Canada. And there was, you know, pretty broad support for the pandemic strategies. But that's starting to erode. And part of it is we're hearing your media, you know, we're being infected by your discourse. Yeah. And so, you know, that polarization is really frustrating. And also, again, not going to surprise you, the politicization. And look, that's happening everywhere. You know, every country's, you know, has an element of politicization around COVID. But I think in your country, in the United States, and I'm a dual citizen, so my country too, we're seeing that even more. And that's having, you know, a profound impact on things like public trust. It may have an impact on when vaccines roll out. And I think it's having, again, a spillover effect on other jurisdictions. So again, that's really frustrating. And the other thing is, you're also starting to see that big difference in healthcare systems, where we have universal healthcare system here. And in the United States, you have, you know, this very fragmented system that doesn't cover all the citizens. And I think that also really changes both the public discourse, but the equity issues and social justice issues and also the political issues.
Let's say that one of my 2021 New Year's resolutions is to improve my health media literacy by at least 50%. What are three tips or suggestions that you might have for me?
I'm going to say, number one, utilize those critical thinking tips I kind of alluded to earlier. You know, arm yourself with the ability to tease out what a good study is from a bad study. You know, I know that's a broad one, but I absolutely think it's essential. and it can be very helpful. So number two, and this one I'm going to bundle together a couple of ideas. I really think you need to pause. People need to pause and just to relax and to reflect. Now, that may sound overly simplistic, but there's actually good data to support the idea that if we can nudge people to pause and to reflect, and they're less likely to spread misinformation and less likely to sort of internalize misinformation. One of my colleagues, Gordon Pennycook, has done this really cool research where he found exactly that. You know, most people want to be accurate. Most people don't want to spread misinformation. And if you can just encourage people, nudge people to pause before they share online, we can reduce the spread of misinformation. And there is a growing body of evidence to suggest that that very simple, straightforward strategy can really have an impact. It can have an impact on your life, and it can also sort of slow the spread of misinformation more broadly. And I think number three, I touched on it already, you know, take that social media break, you know, really allow yourself to be removed from the noise for just a little bit, right? Whether it's throughout the day or perhaps at night. And if people can do that, I think it'll have an impact on their own mental health, but also allow them to look more critically at the information that they do see.
Okay, so we are talking to Dr. Timothy Caulfield about health media literacy, and managing somehow to keep our sanity in the time of COVID-19. And as he said, a part of that is being more critical, and also, I think, slower, just in all the different ways that we engage with the media-saturated world that we're now in. Dr. Caulfield, we really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for this opportunity, and keep safe.
Yes. This is not the first show that we've done about the public health and mental health implications of mass media. I would like to share with you a clip from episode 40, Mental Health and Media, Stop Raising Awareness Already. You're about to hear from Dr. Mike Mackert of the Center for Health Communication at the Moody College of Communications at the University of Texas at Austin on why he thinks public health awareness campaigns often come up short in their impact.
In an advertising context, we spend a lot of time trying to start talking to our students about how the goal of an advertising campaign isn't to generate buzz. It's not to get people talking, it is about to get people to buy things. And if you aren't selling things as an advertiser, you are going to be fired from your job. And so I tend to kind of translate that into sort of a mental health or in a health comm context of all awareness. Like, it's not, people being aware isn't good all by itself. Some awareness can be bad awareness if it makes people hold perceptions that aren't accurate, or it kind of creates information that is really hard to dislodge later.
If you want to hear the full episode 40, I've included a link, along with other related links, in the description for today's episode. We hope that you enjoyed this conversation about COVID-19 in media. Please share it with everyone you can think of. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave us a review and subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, TuneIn, or Spotify. Thanks for joining us.